Well, this morning we're going to continue our Freedom Friday series. We're visiting with a local veteran from the Fontenelle area. Lyle Stubb Milholland joins us this morning. Lyle, thanks for your time.
That's just fine. I've got a lot of time.
Well, you spent a little time, too, it looks like, overseas. You were in the Army Air Corps, and you were drafted at that time.
Yes, I volunteered to go to the draft. You couldn't enlist then because they wanted to put you where they wanted to.
Sure.
So you couldn't enlist.
Yeah. What year was that?
1943.
So at that time, of course, we all know what was going on in the world in 1943. So you knew you were going to be put in an important position at that point.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Can you talk a little bit about your basic training? You left around this area here in Adair County with some other guys as well and went off to basic. Where'd you go?
Went out to Shepherd Field, Texas. I had been to Omaha. That's the farthest I've been out of the state of Iowa. And we all said when we got to Texas, we was in a foreign country, naturally.
Yeah.
Texans didn't believe that.
I'm sure they didn't. And I called him Lyle Milholland. It's Stubb is how most folks are going to know him, so I don't want you to get confused here this morning, too. But when young Stubb took off for the service, there were a few other guys that that took off from around this area with you. Where did they go?
Ones that I remember went to Shepherd Field, Texas. Probably some of them went somewhere else, but the ones I remember went to the Air Corps, Shepherd Field.
What's it like at that point in your life being a young rural Iowa kid who's sent off to, explore the world in a way that maybe you didn't really want to at that point?
Well, I was pretty homesick, but I held back the tears. Some of the guys cried. They said, we're a long ways from home, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, that was, didn't really bother me that much, but it bothered me.
It's never easy to make that first trip away and then knowing what you may have to walk into as well. When you went through basic training, did you get any input on what types of things that you might be interested in the service?
Well, no, we mostly got cussed at in basic training. We were supposed to be dummies, and I guess we probably were as far as the Air Corps is concerned. I wanted to be a fire. I knew that.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was it.
Yeah, that's basic training for you, though. Tear you down to build you back up again and make you tougher than you were when you got there.
Yeah.
Well, when they toughened you up and sent you off, you had a chance to get into the cadet training?
Yeah, I took a test and I passed it. In fact, I was a top half of my Air Corps cadet class at Lubbock, Texas, Texas Tech College. But I didn't like it. They was treating us like West Point, and I wasn't used to it.
So did you get a choice of what you did after that, or did they tell you where you were going to go?
No, they gave me my choice, and I went to radio school at Scottfield, Illinois. I kind of liked that. I think you have to be kind of silly to be able to take code. So that was it.
Young people who are in radio today don't understand what radio was like back then. It was a whole lot different.
They don't understand International Morse code.
Yeah.
It was dots, dash. We call it did-da, like F was did-da, did, so forth.
You still remember a lot of that?
Oh, yeah, I remember all of it. I could take 25 words a minute.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I guess they drilled it into you so hard, it just never comes back out again. Talk a little bit about your experiences after that. I know you spent time overseas and things, too. Yeah. What happened to Stubb after he got through radio school?
Well, I went to Yuma, Arizona. Okay. I spent July and August in Yuma, Arizona. Living in a tent. That was fun. But I never noticed near as much then as I would now. I mean, I was 20 by then, and it never bothered me that much. It bothered me to see those people so poor. That was the only thing.
Well, I want to talk about your later time. You spent 29 months in the Army Air Corps, and you got a chance to experience some of these things here stateside. At what point did you go overseas?
We went to San Francisco and 44, but it was faded in, fogged in, and we didn't get off till January of 45 for Hawaii. We flew to Hawaii. That was our first stop.
What was your thought process at that time, knowing that, you're not in the continental U.S. anymore, now you're moving someplace else and getting a little closer to the action?
Well, I was too young and dumb to be worried too much about it. So I think our next flight out of there, we got grounded there for a few days for some reason, and a couple of us, I can't believe we were able to, we sneaked out of that ditch, went underneath the fence, and we got through that, went on a city bus, went downtown, and fooled around a little bit. Just I was too young to really appreciate it. We seen Waikiki Beach, and it was completely dead because it was wartime and there's nothing going on there.
Sure. You had a chance to spend some time overseas. I know you spent time in the Philippines and had a chance to read a couple of articles here real quick and see some photos and things. What kind of experience was that for you?
Well, like I say, it didn't really bother me that much. It bothers me more now to fly on a plane than it did then. I went on the honor flight back to Washington, D.C., and I was a little bit leery about that. But when I was in the bomber crew, we just always thought we was going to get back.
Sure.
And we did.
Can you talk at all about some of those experiences, some of those missions that you had to attend to?
Well, one of the scariest ones was it was completely fogged. We couldn't see it at all, so the formation blew up, spread out, and was flying over Formosa. They call it Taiwan now. And all of us navigators said, there's some mountains around here higher than we are. So the pilot gained altitude real quick. And we've come out of it all right.
How big was the crew?
10.
10-person crew?
Uh-huh.
And everybody had their specific job. You were radio, I assume.
Yeah, that's right.
So what was your job on there, just to keep communications?
Yeah, I had to send back to the home station what we done, how well we hit the target, what the enemy action was, the flak and so forth. If we went down, of course, I had to... Well, you could screw in the transmitter, and it would just keep sending out a signal until somebody heard it. Sure. And then they'd have your position figured out.
Sure. Any close calls?
Well, yeah. The gas tank was in the wings.
Okay.
And it had underneath, it had steel 4 inches thick, I imagine. And we had some flak go 3 inches probably back into it. If it had got clear in the gas tank, that would have been it.
Did you spend a lot of time in combat areas then?
Well, every mission that we flew on was in, we call them strikes, we didn't call them missions.
Sure.
We was in combat area. Mostly, it was mostly anti-aircraft fire, not too much fighter planes.
Yeah. Did you get involved in a lot of those strikes then? Do you know how many you flew through?
25.
25.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about what it was like when it was over. 29 months came up when the war was over. They didn't need you anymore, I guess, sent you packing. But what was it like? What was the mood like at that time when all of this strife, when everything, all the worry and everything, when it was all over?
It was almost like being drunk. Great feeling. We couldn't wait to get home.
Yeah.
We got home pretty quick after that.
Oh, it didn't take you very long.
No, not after it was over. It was on Okinawa, and Japanese, I should say, were all done.
Yeah.
So we took off. I think our first field I landed on when we left Okinawa was Guam.
Talk a little bit about, after that, when you had a chance to come home, did you ever consider going anyplace else except back here near where you were from?
Well, my folks lived in California then.
Okay.
And so I went to see them. And I had never been back home, and I still had friends that I knew when I was in high school, real good friends. Some had went in the Army, and some got killed, but some was coming back home, too. And we had quite a time for a while there after the war.
Well, you got to celebrate a little bit, have some fun while you can before you get back to serious life again. Have you had a chance over the years to keep in touch with some of the guys that you served with in your unit?
Well, there's Tave Gunner here. He was from Anaheim, California. Now he lives in Bermuda Dunes, California.
Mm-hmm.
And we still correspond. Harold LeDuc, we always call him Duke. When I heard his name was LeDuc, I always call him Big Duke. I thought that sounded like some outlaw somewhere from Chicago.
Yeah, it does. Is it hard for people that that didn't serve to really understand the type of relationships that you form with guys that that you're with so often when you're put in harm's way?
Well, I don't know. We were almost like a family.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all real close. I liked all those guys. A couple of them was a little bit uppity, but we got along real good, and we liked each other.
People come from all kinds of different backgrounds, but they're all thrown into the same situation sometimes. So you got to learn to get along.
Yeah.
Good experience for you. You had an opportunity to serve those 29 months. Did that help you grow as a person, maybe professionally, when you came back home to start the rest of your life? Was it a positive experience, a good one for you?
I think it did. It gave me a lot of confidence, which I lacked before. I think it did, really.
Well, it's 29 months. It doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it sure seemed like it at the time, I'm sure.
We thought it was a long time then.
I'm sure you did. Well, Stubb, again, hey, thanks so much for visiting with us here today and sharing some of your stories. And thank you. We salute you for your service, too. Thanks for all you did.
Well, thank you. It's been nice talking to you.